Welcome to Community Forum, a weekly call-in program produced at the studios of KSKA. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. And now, the host of Community Forum, Nellie Moore.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Community Forum. If you're listening in the afternoon, it is a live call-in program, and you are welcome to call in. Our number is 550-8433, and our toll-free is 1-888-353-5752. If you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in because the program has been pre-recorded. You can also reach me by email, which is we're going to be getting into more here shortly. So I'll write down communityforum@ksKA.org. We're talking blogging today. I have two guests here in the studio. First of all, I want to introduce from our staff, the director of IT services, who does all of our web stuff, John Prophet. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Nellie.
I was kind of chicken to ask you, and then one of my the queen of my contract, she called up and said, well, what about John? And I was like, really? So thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And also, many of you may have seen his work, heard his work, operator of progressivealaska.blogspot.com, Philip Munger. Welcome.
Thanks, Nellie. I love your show.
Thank you. And I hope I'm really encouraging people to call in. We want to talk about blogs today. And, of course, politics is the hot topic once again of the week. Alaska is in the headlines everywhere. I got a call from Washington, D.C. this morning. I guess the Ted Stevens news was a huge picture on the cover of the Washington Post. And all of the stations and the whole nation is just reacting to what the grand jury handed out yesterday. So let's talk a little bit to Philip. I wanted to also mention you've done music. You're a composer.
I am. I've been called Alaska's most notorious composer several times.
And you also received a Rasmussen Foundation grant to continue with some of your work.
That's right. I got a Rasmussen fellowship this spring and to basically help me in the work I'd already decided I was going to be doing. And my next project that I'm working on is incidental music for UAA's fall production of As You Like It by Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really exciting. I'm going to be working with Tom Score, who's a wonderful director, and with the drama department there through like a wall at the Fine Arts Building at UAA. And a week from Friday and a week from Saturday down in Homer and Seward, the Kenai Peninsula Orchestra will be playing a piece I wrote last year in memory of Gordon Wright, Maestro Gordon Wright, who passed away a year and a half ago. And I wrote a rag about his last ride when his friends Mike Dunham, John Luther Adams, several other people brought his body down from his cabin near Indian and ended up riding the coffin down the last part with Gordon in it. And this is dedicated to Gordon's memory. He was a great lover of ragtime. Yeah.
And so we truly have an artiste in our presence. How did you get into the crazy world of blogging?
I've been communicating on the internet for about 25 years. Back in, I believe it was early 1984 or late 1983, I was attending classes at Mat-Su College, and I took a couple of computer courses, one in programming and one in what computers meant, because I wanted to update my skills. And started messaging on topics on the internet and have been doing that on and off ever since. And blogs are a logical development of the types of tools available as more and more usable graphic interfaces became not just available, but inexpensive or free.
Yes, exactly. I think that is the inexpensive or free has really changed and just totally opened up the internet tremendously.
And it's just fascinating. I've had experiences. I worked in news a long time ago for a number of years in Washington and in Alaska. And I've always been interested in how quick you could get feedback from people. Mm-hmm. Call-in programs are one of those things. And blogs are sort of like call-in programs in that sense. If you write a letter to the editor, it might appear the next day, especially if you can email it, which is similar to blogging in a way. But if you mail it and then they call you and they want you to change something, it can take days. About a year and a half ago was one of the experiences that got me to want to be a blogger. The Anchorage Daily News had run a story about Ann Coulter's new book on the bottom below the fold on page A1. When there was really important news and her book, there was no critical analysis of how awful this book was. It was just like they were doing stenography and supporting this book.
Yeah.
And I thought, good grief. So I wrote them a letter to the editor, and they called me back, and they said I couldn't use a certain word, four-letter word that begins with an S and ends with a T, and and has an L for the second letter.
Yeah.
And the woman from the Daily News says, I agree that's what she is, but she can't use it because it's considered to be derogatory. So I got on the internet with some of my friends, and we discussed it, and we had a contest to see who could come up with the best term, and it came out to be meretricious purveyor of calumny, which is a great description of Ann Coulter. So I've gotten more into it, but I got into blogging specifically by wanting to go with a friend of mine, Fred James, to Vic Coring's trial and create a blog for that trial that would have a person who had been a longtime critic of Vic Coring's, me, and one of his very closest friends, Fred James, have a blog together.
Interesting.
And I had hoped to develop into a dialogue where we could just comment as the trial went along, but Fred wanted more time with his pieces before he published them, where I'm more of the off-the-cuff type of a guy, as people know if they read my blog. And but we really learned a lot from the experience, and afterwards I thought, I think I'm willing to do this. I've been considering writing a book about my Alaska experiences, so this is sort of practice for it.
So I want to get more into the day-to-day in just a little bit, but I wanted to bring John into the conversation, John Prophet from EPTI. John, you work a lot in the new media, and everybody's seeing kind of newspapers trying to deal with the transition to more internet. Talk about that a little bit and sort of how you fit into it, being a ungraying haired person.
Yeah.
Well, you'll be here a little longer. You'll get really gray. But
yeah. Well, being in public radio or public media, because we also have public television here, being under 40 is considered young. So I guess I'm young. I don't know that I can speak dramatically about newspapers other than, wow, what a mess that they find themselves in, where their whole information distribution system is being disrupted by the internet, because I can get it faster, I can get it anywhere, and I can get it without paper on my time in my place of choosing, rather than waiting for them to put it on paper and put it at a newspaper stand or deliver it to my home. And so many more things are happening as well, especially the disruption of advertising as it's shifting away from all traditional media, radio, television, newspapers, et cetera. But for newspapers especially, the tremendous loss of advertising revenue from classified ads that have moved online. Here at the station, I'm trying to bring, web things into our activities. It's very difficult to do. We have limited budgets and such. We do the best we can. We've made some big strides in the last couple of years, but it is definitely difficult.
Probably, too, the organization has changed quite a bit in trying to get everybody to focus on, contributing in a timely
absolutely.
Manner.
And it is another medium. It requires different skills. It requires different experiences and outlooks. It's a much more open medium, as I'm sure Philip finds, with his comments and everything else. It's a very interactive medium, and radio and television don't tend to be that. Newspapers haven't historically been that either. They've had the letters to the editor, but that's about it, the extent of a lot of the interaction with the public. So it's really a new world. And I actually blog myself, not aside from my job, where I talk about new media, specifically in the public media space, public broadcasting, television, radio, and such. And it's not so much of an Anchorage or Alaska or politics-oriented blog, but it's more oriented toward a conversation within the public media space.
Philip, we are right now in the middle. Ted Stevens has just been indicted, and people have been thinking this, would or would not be happening. It has happened. We're at our 50th anniversary of statehood. And it just seems like, from what I've been hearing, that, people either, really believe it or they really don't, or...
That's so well put, Nellie, and what John's doing. I you guys are really fast to put your APRN reports up. And I used one from yesterday on just what you're talking about. It's going to be up at 5 o'clock our time at a national blog called Fire Dog Lake, with a YouTube of me presenting a series of tubes to Ted Stevens' office yesterday. Based on 121 poems that were written about him last week. And although I didn't predict that this would happen yesterday and today, we had this contest that we scheduled 3-4 weeks ago that ran over the last couple weeks where people would enter poems. We'd have them judged by Alaskan judges because we were looking for people who might be outside of Alaska who were learning something about Alaska by us covering it. But you guys ran a report from your stations around the state of people doing just what you're describing. Yeah. I call it PTSD, post-TED stress disorder. And the whole state's going through it on one level or another. I've known Ted. The first time I interviewed him on Cordova Radio was October 1973.
Right.
And I've interviewed back then all of our members of Congress and some of our local legislators and local officials and industry people in Cordova. And how do we deal with this? We move on, I would hope. Ted doesn't appear that he's ready for that. And the blogs, both the Daily News blog, which is sometimes very good, sometimes over the weekends it seldom is because those people have lives to live, where we bloggers are pretty persistent and you might say obstinate, you might say obsessed. But but we feel, a lot of us, especially on the progressive side here in Alaska and around the country, that we're on a mission, and that's to take the country back from this paradigm of the Bush years, which is to destroy the Constitution, torture people, and rip off everybody but multimillionaires and billionaires.
I think today on your blog there's a caricature of Ted going down in flames. Do you think this is what's happening?
I know it's not fair to ask you if you do, but you're the host. Yes, I do, and I'm conflicted. You know, I worked in corrections for a long time. I ran the Cordova Center for over 2 years, which is the biggest halfway house in the state. I sent hundreds of people back to prison. And as much as I might be conflicted because I'd gotten to know them as an administrator or as their case manager in some cases, or just, you know, in the way an administrator gets to know people under their care, every one of them, by the rules, deserved it. I noticed in the APRN report yesterday how many people were downplaying what Senator Stevens has done. And in my view,
there were people who are going to vote for him.
I mean, they say this is just a bunch of, it's like an APOC. I mean, I think Mike Dugan said this is just like a big APOC. How do you say it? Violation. The reality is he took $250,000, perhaps more, because this isn't all that we've known that's been out there, and didn't report it to anybody. And from a company that was benefiting from things that he did in the Senate a lot, whether that had anything to do with this $250,000 is why it's shaking out that way. But anybody who doesn't accept that he took $250,000 that he didn't deserve is going through the worst part of PTSD.
John, yesterday, what kinds of things, you know, here at APR and APTI were you seeing when, you know, when everybody's in the process of putting together Alaska News Nightly and pulling together all these stories from stations around the state and little man on the street things? A few years ago, that would have been an incredibly difficult thing to pull off.
Yeah, it's actually, it's very much a radio operation still for the Alaska Public Radio Network, because their primary mission is to serve the public radio stations across the state. So the web stuff is really something that comes later. It's I don't want to say it's an afterthought, but it is the thing that we do when we're done with all the other stuff. And it's stuff that both news director Duncan Moon and I currently are doing after the show's done. During the collection of things during the day, I will occasionally, if it's a breaking story, like the Stevens story is a big story, we'll put stuff up during the day, sort of interim things. But that's pretty rare, just because our resources are not aligned for doing things on the web. They're aligned for doing things for radio stations. And that is aiming for Alaska News Nightly, that is actually broadcast live at 5 p.m., although on KSK it's at 6 p.m., but it's broadcast live at 5 for the rest of the, for many of the stations around the state. So the focus, they're very busy. They're running around. They're making phone calls. They're exchanging emails, et cetera. It's definitely a radio operation.
Why is that? Because when I, you know, like, I understand that there, you know, I know kind of how things work here, and there's are staffing issues. Mm-hmm. But when I am looking for resources, and probably Philip, you know, we're looking to the news, to the various television stations. Channel 2 is very good. Mm-hmm. The daily news, and you know, I want APRN to be up there too. You know.
Well, so do I. But we just haven't gotten there. Our resources are not set up for that. The station, you know, APRN's funding comes from a lot of different sources, but one of the big ones is the stations themselves around the state, 25 of them, well, now 24. And they are looking for a radio product. They have no real use for a web product, so that's not our primary focus. Mm-hmm. That may change in the future. Personally, I would hope it would change because I'd like to have a more vibrant web resource. Even if I wasn't working here, I'm like you. It's like, hey, yeah, guys, stay on the story, update it, keep it going. That just hasn't been the way it's happened so far. You know, in a lot of ways, newspapers are preceding us into this difficult transition. And we're going to have to go through that, too.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners, this is a call-in program. I know I've got callers holding. It'll be just a couple more minutes. If you'd like to join in the discussion, we're talking blogs. Today, my guest, Philip Munger and John Prophet. My phone number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or toll-free 1-888-353-5752. And you can also email me at communityforum@kska.org. Philip, I wanted to ask you, you know, John sort of talked about how we're using internet here, but how do you afford to do it?
How do I what?
How can you live? How do you, you know, buy your organic vegetables and still be able to
blogging? Oh, I have a day job. And, you know, I think my wife might say, you know, where's the time for me? And our kids are in college, so that's part of how I was able to choose this. I spent a lot of time with both of our kids. And but it's not fun in a way you describe it. It's mm-hmm. it's more like it's serious on many levels, but I do like to keep humor. And you can do things like that on blogs you can't do in your day job. And
right.
I find that frustration in a lot of the journalists I talk to in Anchorage. All of my experiences with journalists at the Daily News, the Anchorage Press, here have been positive with their editors and the people responsible for making sure they get their paychecks. They have not been nearly as satisfactory. And mm-hmm. I understand how those people are conflicted, but essentially I get to use nasty words on my blog. I get to be emotional. I don't have to be a strict journalist. I can combine being a commentator and a journalist. Other Alaska blogs, though, are better at a lot of things in this wide, wide spectrum that I only mm-hmm. cover a part of than mine is. And a lot of them cover different niches that are really important. And one thing to realize, Nellie, is for instance, on the coverage of Ted Stevens that I've been doing at my blog and at three national blogs, is that there might only be hundreds of Alaskans or dozens of Alaskans who read some of our stories, but nationally, there are millions.
Right.
More people than live in Alaska have read some of the stories some of the better Alaskan bloggers have written in the last few months.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're helping people understand Alaska because, as you know, a lot of people totally misunderstand Alaska. And Alaskans misunderstand how venal, short-sighted, selfish our politicians appear nationally.
And we want to get to that. But first, I want to go to the phones. Don't forget, if you're listening in the evening, you cannot call in. But right now, I want to go to Carolyn on line 10. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi, this is Caroline. I wanted to bring up a quick question, which incorporates both things. Number one, net neutrality. I want somebody to quickly explain how important that is, and is the absence of Stevens on that Commerce Committee going to make a big difference?
Good question.
I can listen off the air.
John, why don't you take that first?
Yeah, throw that one to me. So if we're looking for a definition of net neutrality, just really quickly, it actually has multiple definitions depending on who you're talking to, especially whether you own a telecommunications company or you are an average citizen. I think there's two definitions there. Very quickly, the notion being that the people who operate the networks that operate the internet, which are largely telephone companies as well as cable companies, the question is, should they be allowed to decide what traffic is will actually run on their networks, and should they be able to decide where you can or cannot go? Now, of course, they would not appreciate that sort of definition, but if they are able to control that, or can they charge more for you to access certain types of content and less for other kinds of content? If they're able to control that, does that change the neutrality of the network? Does that mean that you will either have access to or not have access to a free and open conversation out there on the internet? So Stevens, in his position on the Commerce Committee, I'm not a real expert on what his positions have been, other than it seems to me, just thinking back over the coverage that I've read, it seems a little back and forth. I'm not sure exactly where he stood. Perhaps Philip knows a little bit more about where Stephen stood on that.
He's famous mostly for this one speech he gave on the floor of the Senate.
The tube speech, yeah.
Yeah, the internet is a series of tubes. It's not a truck and so on. And it's been made into a series of YouTubes on YouTube. The reality is he's made a lot of other talks that have been available from time to time on C-SPAN. And what I've seen, not just him speaking in the Senate, in the Senate chambers or in committee, but at telecommunications conferences, is that he was put in charge of that committee not because of what he knew, but because he was easy to control and what he didn't know. And that's – so that won't change. But we need to realize that the way to find out who in Congress is interested in ending net neutrality, you look and see who's getting funds from the companies that have the least free press, Fox News being the greatest example. One of the candidates in this upcoming race is taking contributions from, I believe, 9 people who are associated with Fox or News Corp. And I've yet to see a story in the Alaska Press about it. I've covered it extensively. I'm reading an article right now on the internet by a guy named Howie Klein, a national expert on net neutrality, criticizing this very practice, with the list of the people that Ted Stevens's PAC sent money to, and they're all deeply embedded with the telecom community that wants to charge you for pretty much everything that you do on the web and be gatekeepers to keep certain types of political activity from happening that would be against their financial interests.
John, isn't there talk about creating a separate internet for nonprofit schools? Isn't there somewhere that they're setting aside part of the internet that can't be full of advertising, that can be used just for, you know, pure education? And
I have not heard of that. Certainly there's the Internet too, which is a completely, well, not completely, but a largely separate network that is used for research, universities, things like that, where there's extremely high bandwidth and very few people with access to it. Mm-hmm. The general public does not have access to Internet too.
That's sort of how it started out.
The first dark internet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It started out with very little access, and now it's become everybody's internet for the most part. But Internet 2 is still reserved. I'm not aware of any moves to create a section of the internet that is, you know, a commercial free zone that is for schools and public entities like that. I haven't heard that before.
And the notion that the web is now free is, you know, basically I can get to the Daily News and get some of their articles, but to get others I have to pay them for.
Yeah.
And quite a bit.
Exactly.
And if I want to use one of their photos,
newspapers as well.
Yeah, the policy varies from paper to paper. The New York Times wouldn't even let you read their today's edition for a while unless you were paying them a certain amount a month. So.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about the mechanics too. John, how do people find out how to organize a blog? I guess, first of all, you have to have, you know, sort of an organized thought in your head of what it is that you want to do.
Not necessarily.
Based on some
okay,
of my
never
reading.
Mind that.
Yeah. Yeah, based on some of my reading, I don't know that you have to be terribly organized in your thinking. My own writing included.
Is this going to be a telling point about you and Philip Munger or what?
Well, I think any honest blogger that feels the pressure of getting something out there has done this. I had to change something today. I thought Ted Stevens was going to be arraigned today. It's mm-hmm. going to be tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tomorrow. Or at least that's what they say. Who knows? They could change it at any moment, I suppose. As far as getting started with blogging, I think you can start with you have something to say. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of ways to get started, and there's tons of them that are free. And there's no one best way or only way to do it. If you've got something to say, something to share, you know, it doesn't even have to be something political. A lot of writing on the internet started as just diaries. People were just keeping very public and open diaries. I remember when that was a big deal. Now, I don't know if anybody really does that. I'm sure people do that, but it's not very fascinating reading, I think.
You haven't been to some of these rock band MySpace pages,
well,
have you?
Yeah, I guess maybe MySpace is a difference.
I think I'm going to have to create a special button for Philip somewhere on your note.
So, yeah, there's a lot of places to go to start, but the first thing is, do you have something to say, something to share? Mm-hmm. And you can start from anywhere to get started. I guess the ones that I would throw out there, if we're talking about actually how to do it, and I can throw these links up on the KSK site as well, is a couple of the mainstream blogging ones would be blogger.com, which actually that's the system that Philip's using. That's free. It's owned by Google, operated. You can do whatever you want, pretty much. There are terms of service you have to live with, but
yeah,
pretty much anything. WordPress.com, and again, I'll put these links on the KSK.org site, is another free one. I can't remember. I'm forgetting one of them.
Well, think of it before.
There's others, yeah. But then there's also smaller blog. If that's too much for you, you can go with a microblogging service. Two of them which come to mind is Tumblr, which is TUMBLR.com, and that's free as well. And that's a much simpler, smaller type of blogging. It's not the full-featured kind of thing that Philip and I are doing, but it's not as intimidating either. And then the micro of the microest would be something like Twitter, at right. Twitter.com. And in fact, we're actually on Twitter right now. I've been doing a little live Twittering while we're sitting here.
Yeah.
And you can find that at Twitter.com. We're currently at Twitter.com/KSKA. And that is where your updates are limited to text, and they're limited to 140 characters, and you can't write any more than that. So if you don't have a lot to say, that might be a great place to start. It's also a social network. So those are the places to get started. But yeah, just have something to say, or, you know, you could just be writing to friends and family. Instead of using email, you can use these services.
I know that, you know, this probably sounds really boring after everything you guys have been talking about, but there are places like Arthritis Today where you can go, and people have posted, you know, information about, you know, updates on new medications, breakthroughs, all kinds of information. And that's not just true of that particular disease, but many others as well, and as well as parenting. So it's not just politics that, you know, is out there. There are blogs of almost every imaginable kind.
I found out how to easily change the oil filter on my diesel golf at a diesel golf blogger.
Wow.
Blog. And we've found out about possible medical problems of friends and family on blogs about how to deal with these things. And they can be very, very helpful for a lot of people. And they're not the sort of things that you go back to every day. They're just, you visit
sure.
them when you need
yeah.
to. And sources of information for anybody. The Wikipedia has expanded so fast. It expands every day. And YouTube does. I use YouTube in my classes at University of Alaska Anchorage in Eagle River Community College. And there's new, more helpful material up there every day.
How are you using it?
To show classical music performances from the past that are archival. They might not be the best video quality or sometimes sound quality, but they show kids history like you couldn't from a book.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps them interested. It helps people be engaged. And this is getting better all the time. And I'm going to be involved in a look at how to write these types of textbooks and make them more interactive this coming year. And I'm excited about that because I'm 61, but I see people from their 50s on not quite getting it. And maybe some of the listeners here say, what's the big deal about this? Why are they even talking? I don't even know what they're talking about. And if you do have web access, I'd like to recommend a local blogger who's cataloged and characterized our local political blogs rather well, and that's at a place called What Do I Know? Steve.blogspot.com, or if you just Google "What Do I Know" blog, it'll come up, and it's Steve Offrecht. He doesn't mind his real name being out there, and he's a retired professor at UAA, or semi-retired, and he's characterized all our Alaska blogs and told, basically done what John's done, what John's trying to set up at your site, and that's show people what blogs are, where they can go for the tools, and then describe some of these blogs, and I think he's even got a guide on how to not goof up. But wonderful source. Steve's my favorite Alaska blogger.
He's really good, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, great. I hope some of our listeners will, you know, take advantage of that. If you have comments, questions, come on, give us a call. We'd like to hear from you. 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Earlier we talked a little bit, John, about anonymity. Okay, now I'm doing it.
That's why I practiced it.
Remaining anonymous.
Yes.
You know, using a pseudonym. Someone had told me the other day they wanted to post something, but they didn't want anybody to know who had written it. I said, well, people use pseudonyms all the time.
Sure. Mark Twain did it, or Samuel Clemens did it. Yeah, that's nothing new.
George Sand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was her name?
She had a real French name, but
yeah. Shoot, I should know that. The movie Impromptu, I know that much. Anyway.
I'll Google her.
Right, there you go. Yeah, we're sitting here with computers. So what about anonymity? I'm sorry.
And, you know, is it okay to do it?
Sure.
Can you be, remain anonymous?
There's two sides to that coin, as with so many things, at least in my opinion. Sure, you can be anonymous. Anonymity does have its limits, I would say, on the web. If people really want to find out who is behind that blog, they may be able to figure it out. Depends on their technical sophistication and depends on whether the service they're using will protect them. If you want to go out and start, you know, libeling people, you know, in a legal sense, not just, you know, defaming is also illegal. It can be tracked down. You know, the subpoenas can be written. You can be followed up on. So I wouldn't advise anyone to say, oh, well, anonymity, I can do whatever I want. No, you know, you really could be tracked down if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that anonymity usually comes up in is terms of comments, because not everybody's a blogger where they actually have a blog where they write things, but they will post comments, and it's very common to post comments on the Anchorage Daily News or the APRN. We have our comments there. Comments also come in on KSKA. And can you do that anonymously? And you could either lie about your identity, or some sites will allow you to be anonymous, or you can sign your actual name. And that's a personal choice. Sometimes anonymity can be very powerful because people can be whistleblowers who are releasing information that they could get in trouble for, but the public may or may not need to know. That's a matter of opinion in a lot of cases. But for me, whenever I do anything, I always sign it with my name. If I'm not comfortable saying it, and assigning my name to it, then maybe I shouldn't be saying it. But that's a personal thing.
Right.
And I haven't been in a whistleblower situation. You know, we're not taking mugs home at KSK.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing's not happening.
I know you took a vest, though.
Actually, I don't. They've never had vests
kidding,
the times I've been here. So anonymity's it's a double-edged sword. I'm not a fan of it myself.
What about bloggers on your site and pseudonyms, Phil?
I let them use anonymity, and some people are kind enough to sign their name. And when I've you know, sometimes if you are critical of Sarah Palin, you're guaranteed to get a lot of comments, even mildly critical. And I've probably only been mildly critical of her, but I get frustrated because I'll see four comments by anonymous, and I know they're not all the same person. But it would be nice to know how to distinguish one from another, so I can. And get a conversation going, perhaps.
Mm, yeah.
And sometimes, you know, if people want to be really nasty or cutting, they'll do that. And that's frustrating because, you know, I use my real name. And that was something I didn't have to think about very much when I decided to do my own blog.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what to do. I've only deleted a couple of comments because they were really vulgar and untrue, and I even had to one of the untrue ones. I can't even remember what the issue was now. It was months ago, but I deleted that one after discussing with people. And You know, the example that really illustrates what John was saying was when somebody thinking they could be anonymous created redirects that were in Ethan Berkowitz's name to try and slime him. And it was really junior high school stuff, not even junior high school stuff, and apparently they got caught. And it brought down a political campaign. Mm-hmm. And that was really sad and stupid. And so the as you said, the anonymity, I did it.
Okay, don't hold your breath waiting for me.
That's why I practice it. But anyway, doesn't work in the face of good research.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to the phones. 550-8433, toll-free 1-888-353-5752. Can't call in the evening because it's been pre-recorded. Margaret on line 9, welcome to the show.
Hi. I was just calling. You had talked earlier about how you could have a blog about anything, and I have a blog that's about knitting, and where I put up pictures of stuff I've knit and what it's for and who it's for. And there's a whole huge community online that's all knitting blogs.
That's interesting that you bring that up, Margaret, because one of my friends last year moved out to the Valley, and she and I, you know, do different things like. I'm like an amateur quilter, and she's, you know, now doing things like that and knitting. And so whenever she makes something, she takes a picture of it and she sends it to me. So I know exactly what you're talking about. It's a great way of sharing, you know, things that you've done that people might get ideas from.
Oh, absolutely. I've gotten a ton of ideas from looking at other knitters' blogs. And not only that, it's weird. It's a weird sense of community that it builds through a handicraft, you know, that you can do it without having to ever meet the person. I've had people leave comments on my blog who were, you know, who live in England who I've never met because they saw some picture of something I knit that they liked.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, this is John. Could you tell us what your blog's address is?
Sure. It's winstonsmom.blogspot.com.
Great name.
Well, Winston's my dog. There's a picture of him up there. Actually, right now there's a video of him up there. But
okay, yeah, I've got it right here.
Yep.
Well, great.
So
thanks
right
for
now,
sharing.
There is a sweater I knit for my mom.
Cool. Well, thanks for sharing, Margaret.
Yeah, thank you.
I wanted, what about the, just the amount of work that it takes to maintain your blog, Philip? I mean, you're following, you know, I mean, Ted Stevens, and some of the things that you have on there, like on your, today I saw a photograph with, let's see, Ted Stevens, Don Young, and I think Lisa Murkowski, and there were bars in front of it. Where, you know, where do you come up with that stuff? And do people get angry at you, you know, some people, and say, geez, that was really harsh, or what?
I'm not sure. I mean, I actually do hold back, and people have suggested topics that I haven't touched. You know, my goal is to unite progressives in Alaska. I really believe, living up in the Valley, I've seen this happening where a group of people have taken over Valley politics from about 1994, and slowly, one seat at a time, we're trying to get rational people back in those seats again. That's my view, right? But, and this is through communication and spreading the word and a lot of hard work. So the hard work always goes with it, no matter how you do it. And again, I feel like I'm learning to write past the level that I had experienced before, and I'm grateful for that. I've got some big music projects coming up, partially as part of my Rasmussen Foundation, and I'm going to have the heaviest teaching load I've had in years at UAA this fall. So I'm looking forward to not having that time to spend at the blog, so maybe I can get a little bit of distance from it. But you learn to be more efficient.
What does that do to the people who become addicted to your website? I mean, your blog.
I've read that about other blogs. I don't think anybody's addicted to my website. I know there's.
I know a few.
That's interesting. Well, thanks. I hope we don't have to have a PAA, but it's very interesting. I would like to talk about music and the arts more in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to do interviews with some of the great Alaskan artists that I know about and have met or want to meet. I was just talking a couple weeks ago with a sculptor who was Elizabeth Paratrovitz's son down in Washington, Ron. And, and I thought, boy, I'd like to meet this guy and spend more time talking about his art. And but I'm so engaged with this politics, and it's crescendoing now as we approach the fall elections. And but I do like the idea of uniting people, getting people in touch with each other, and that's as much that draws me back in there when something new comes up or I learn something that I want to share. As anything else,
I wanted to ask you also before we go to John. What is a progressive?
A progressive is somebody that believes that humans progress and that we're the agents of that change, and that progress is a positive thing. How you define progress beyond that would be, to me, would be finding ways to educate people better and to use science to do that, to teach people about the dangers of superstition and hate, and to get people to appreciate that, you know, selfishness and money aren't everything.
Does it have to do with Pebble Mine or anything to do with Anwar?
Oh, well progress would to me in terms of Anwar, if you could use that oil and not spill a drop and employ people doing that and put it into very, very fuel efficient vehicles, that's progress over what we have, no doubt. So progress is relative, and I know no politician aspiring to higher office in Alaska is less progressive than that, or is more progressive than that. And all people aspiring for higher office in Alaska, in order to be voted in, have to accept that paradigm on one level or another. But I think, you know, especially on the Democratic side, you have a lot of candidates who really do want, if we do have access for that oil, to be done as responsibly as possible. As far as other energy developments, for instance, the Chewitna coal fields, this new idea for a so-called clean coal plant at Eielson Air Force Base, this new idea of resurrecting that Soviet, it looks like a Soviet building, the Healy coal-powered plant, those are not progressive ideas. So progress is relative, but I believe humans are capable of it. Some people, you know, believe the world's going to end real soon and everything that we've done is for naught. To me, that's superstition. I don't see any evidence of that.
Is it left-leaning or right-leaning, or can it be labeled either? It seems like we're always anxious to say, well, that monger, you know, he's a...
I'm a real left-leaner. I'm a greeny tree hugger from way back. You know, I've killed millions of fish, and I've developed things. If you go down to the Whittier Harbor, that main harbor, I had the final say-so on that design, and it's something that a bunch of us worked for years and years and years. And I've been involved in a lot of development. But on the other hand, I was a Cordova fisherman when the first organization to sue to stop the pipeline from being built was the Cordova District Fisheries Union, and the Cordovans at the time the pipeline were being built. And these are a lot of guys that had Sierra Club Go Home bumper stickers on their trucks, voted to keep that pipeline from happening because they had this quaint notion that if you ran tankers across the Sound, ultimately one of them would run up on Bly Reef and ruin their fisheries.
Let's go to the lines real quick, and then I want to come back to John and talk a little bit about blogs and public radio and broadcasting. Bill on line one, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. This is Nellie. This is Bill Hess.
Oh, hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm a little beat up at the moment, but getting better and not doing too bad. How about you?
Did you drop one of your cameras on your foot or something, or what?
Oh, worse than that. I took a bad fall in Barrow, and I shattered my shoulder and wound up getting medevaced out to Anchorage, and now I have a new shoulder.
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm glad you have a new shoulder, and it was probably nice, now that you look back on it, that you could experience a medevac.
Well, yeah, and I photographed it all, too, and you can find that on my blog, by the way. So
tell us about your blog. I want to see it.
Okay, I will, but before I do, I would note that I clicked here into Mr. Munger's blog and was pleasantly surprised to see one of my own photos looking right back at me as soon as I opened it up.
Which one's that?
That's the one of Diane and Lotzine.
Mm. Oh, wow. You took that wonderful photo.
I love that photo. Yeah.
That's one of my photos. And in fact, I'll have a little something on Diane on my blog probably next week, but it'll be a totally different kind of thing than this. The reason I wanted to call is I just got into blogging in May, and I took kind of a back road into it. What happened was I just finally became convinced that this is, I don't know how one possibly makes a living in blogs, but I became convinced that this is where everything is going. It's going online, the newspapers, everything is, magazines, they're just falling more. They're not irrelevant at all, but they're not what they once were, and I think the trend will continue. And so I decided to make a couple of blogs, and to start, I happen to be very fond of cats. I've got four cats here, and wherever I go, I photograph any cat I run into, and I get stories about those cats. I got them from all the way from India to England, every place in Alaska.
I'm finding that really hard to believe, Bill, but I'll take your word for it.
Oh yeah, I do. From every region of Alaska, I got photographs of cats I've taken over the past 15 years or so, and little stories, and gradually I'll put a lot of these on here. So I decided to make my first blog about cats, and then and actually Diane Benson had a great cat named Romeo, and that's how she's going to wind up on there. But
hey, why don't you give us the address real quick, and John wants to take a look at it.
Okay, it's nocatsallowed.blogspot.com.
Okay, now you say you're on a second blog development now?
It's mostly formulated in my head. I haven't put anything down yet, but I think I'm going to put a prototype of it up sometime within the next month, and it would probably be more along the lines of what you would have, what you knowing me would have kind of maybe thought I might do, but not exactly. But it would be more along that line. I do not have an address for it yet, so I can't give you that address.
Well, I've seen this blog before. This is
so
great.
Are you talking about photojournalism or rural Alaska, native issues?
It will be largely photojournalistic and documentary photography in style, and it, you know, because I live in the valley, it's going to have a base in the valley, but from that base, I'm kind of trying to figure out the best way to build channels into it that I can reach out anywhere that I happen to be able to get myself to. So the base would be right here in the Matsu Valley, but with little sidebars that can take me anywhere. So.
Interesting. Philip wanted to ask you something.
Or tell you, possibly, Bill, it's B-I-L-L-H-E-S-S, right?
H-E-S-S, Hotel Echo Sierra Sierra.
Okay, I've updated my blog. I've now credited the photo to you, and I love it.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, and as many may know, Bill has a book out with on whaling with some really incredible documentary photographs of that, and I love that book, Bill.
Well, thank you.
Okay, keep us updated. Let's move on now to Scott on line 4. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. How are you?
Good.
Hey, listen, I'm actually from Hawaii, but I'm up here in Anchorage. I'm a wedding photographer as a hobby.
Uh-oh.
And in the wedding kind
okay, of who gets the photos when there's a divorce?
Yeah, I don't know. We cut each one in half, and they share them, I guess.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to be that cynical.
That's okay. But in the kind of the photographer community, especially with weddings, people are trying to merge blogs into more of a traditional website. And I already had like a gallery website, so I added a blog link and created a blog. But I'm kind of struggling with, you know, what kind of content should I have? I just started what I'm calling a blog series called Backstory, which I'll take a picture that the general public may not understand the backstory to that picture, but for me as a photographer, it was, it captured a moment. But aside from that, I'm not really coming up with cool ideas. I mean, I'm putting notes like, hey, I have a new logo, or thanks to this family for letting me shoot a wedding. But I just wonder what other things are out there instead of the shotgun approach for photographers.
Okay, I can see both of these guys' wheels are whirring as we speak. John Prophet and Philip Munger. Can you help us, John?
The first question that comes to mind, and maybe you have an answer to this, maybe you don't, is are there questions that you commonly get from your clients or that they ask about, you know, how do you do this, how do you do that, or something like that? If you're not sure what to write, you know, just think of the things that people ask you or talk to you about. I don't know if maybe Philip has some different advice.
I had never thought of this. I mean, the idea of how to deal with the combinations of images and words that I've, you know, the thoughts that I've come up with have been totally different. And maybe you could express it a little bit differently and I could help you more.
Well, yeah, the challenge is when I first started off, you know, I felt kind of, it sounds kind of weird, but this pressure from the community that, oh, I should have a blog on a photographer. So I created a blog. And then I kind of did like an FYI for prospective clients, like what to look for in a contract or what to look for in a good photographer. And then that got kind of dry. So I kind of just started posting pictures of, you know, the jewel boxes that I designed for clients and this kind of thing. And really my clients aren't giving me any other feedback, but they're using it as a communication tool. If you go to my blog, you'll see that people say, hey, I just want to let you know that I loved your work. You're a great photographer, but I'm not getting any actual feedback on my blog itself. So I don't really know, am I hitting the mark? Am I missing the mark?
Well, I don't know if have you gotten site meters so you can find out how many people are actually looking at it? You might be surprised how many people do, yet, you know, people will look at these things, and some of the highest traffic blogs in the country don't get comments. And what, you know, people who want a lot of comments generally try and write controversial remarks. So if you're writing something that's helpful, it might lead to further questions in detail, but you're not going to get feedback like you might be expecting. Mm-hmm.
I think my
my
comment would be, well, I guess my comment and question would be, do you take pictures of anything other than weddings?
Well, I lived up here for 4 years, and a lot of my background was wildlife and nature. So yes, but it's not predominant on my blog or on my website.
Okay. Well, it's just a thought that your blog could be a place for exposing things other than wedding stuff. I'm sure you take other pictures, and even if they're older pictures, even if they're sort of archival stuff, you could dig through that and, you know, a picture a day or a picture a week or something to talk about where you were and how you took the picture or things like that. That might be an option is to make it not about weddings.
Well, it's funny you say that. I got an engagement client back in Hawaii. I spent 3 weeks at Katmai a few summers ago taking photos, and they said the reason we picked you is because of your bear pictures. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Bears will do it.
So did the couple resemble bears? Or
No, they were from Hawaii, but I think for them it was so unique because, I mean, obviously in Hawaii you don't have that. So I think for them it was something cool to see and maybe learn from, and then that kind of inspired them to follow through with me, I guess.
Okay, well, thanks for your call, and maybe you can check in with John Prophet. You know where he's at now at APTI, and Philip Munger, and thanks for calling in. And if you have other listeners have comments or questions, we're kind of running out of time, 550-8433. You can't call in the evening because the program's been pre-recorded, and our toll-free 1-888-353-5752. John Prophet is a blog and all of the internet. Now we've just barely talked about new media, but a way for an organization like a public radio station to archive and maintain, an access point for people to go back and look at information that they may have forgotten about a story they heard several weeks ago.
Did Beattie put you up to this?
No. The reason I asked is because when I do research, I'll, you know, look for things like that and try to, Robert R.A. Dillon's blog, he's got some information on their current that goes and looks back at previous interviews he did with Ted Stevens.
That's right, yeah. And he interviewed Ted on Monday.
Yeah, just coincidentally.
I transcribed part of that interview, and that'll be up at Fire Dog Lake. at 5 o'clock. And basically, it pretty much showed to me that Ted didn't have an inkling of what was going to happen on Tuesday, mm-hmm. on Monday.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be very interesting. John, what about, we were just talking earlier about how people were reacting around the state. Have you heard of anything where, people might be blogging, one or two sentences about how they feel about what's happened with this whole VECO mess and Ted?
Sure. We see links that come in to the APRN site, especially APRN, just because that's where most of the news coverage is. People are absolutely blogging about it. There's not just one.
Hard to miss.
There's a lot of them out there. And if you just go to Google and look for Alaska blogs or any kind of terminology like that, you'll find a ton of them. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of them. So, yeah, sure, people are reacting all the time out there.
Go ahead. There's a site. It's alaskapen.com/alaskarants.htm. And basically, it's a list of Alaska blogs. And as each new entry is put up, it's listed there, and so you can just click on those so you don't have to keep your own catalog of blogs mm-hmm. along mm-hmm. the side. And these type of tools or widgets are becoming more and more commonplace, and Steve Offrecht keeps it at his blog now. A lot of the Alaska blogs do. The most fascinating new blog on politics and cultural issues I've seen is one called Alaska Real by a young Tlingit woman, and she is seriously looking at sociological, political aspects of Native culture in a way that's never been looked at before. I met the woman last week, and she's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And another Anchorage blogger who's been around a long time and is very experienced is Celtic Divas Blue Oasis by Linda Kellen. And she's often on the radio now. She's going on to KUDO on, I believe, Tuesday mornings. I might be wrong on that, but with Patty Higgins for the Democratic Party. And she's also going to be, along with Writing Raven from Alaska Real, Alaska's bloggers at the Democratic National Convention. And Dennis Zaki from Alaska Report is going to be at both. He's going to be the only reporter from Alaska at both conventions.
Wonderful. It's going to give people a lot of information. Okay, I want to go back to the phones real quick because we are running out of time. Ellen on line 8, welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking me. I have a quick question for someone. I have a blog that I've been doing for several years now, just issues regarding women and spirituality and religion and that kind of thing. But I've recently had a life change in that my husband and I are adopting from overseas, and so we wanted to create a new blog to kind of capture that and to go into the issues of that. My question is regarding issues of security and privacy on blogs. Do you have suggestions for maintaining somewhat of a distance with your blog audience so that you don't have issues of stalkers or kind of thing? Or have you ever heard of any instances of that?
I'm very well trained in protecting myself and my family, and I'm pretty adventurous. I've been told I should be more worried about people like Ted Stevens than a stalker.
Yeah, I can see that too.
John Prophet, any suggestions? You've been at the busy end of creating information on the
internet. Sure. It's a tough call. You have to make the decision yourself how much information you want to expose and whether you think that presents a risk. Keep in mind that for the most, in almost any blogging situation, if you post it online, it's available to Google and anybody can Google it from anywhere. If it's out there, they will find it. You have to decide whether do you think somebody's going to find it, and if they did find it, what would they do with it, and would that present a risk to you? And it's a tough call, but you're going to have to make it on your own.
Okay, John Prophet from Alaska Public Telecommunications, Inc., the Director of IT Services, and Philip Munger, operator of progressivealaska.blogspot.com. I hate it. We've run out of time.
What a pleasure, Nellie.
Oh, man.
Yeah, thanks, Nellie.
Hope you guys will come back again, and I'll see you next week on Community Forum.
Community Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us, KSKA 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska 99508, or email us at communityforum@ksk.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksk.org/communityforum. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.